at this church, what we've been doing for the last year is looking at Jesus' life, who Jesus was, because Jesus is our example, and we want to love like he did, we want to teach like he did, we want to obey God just like he did. And so we've had the Jesus Life Challenge. Simply, it's this. Read one of the biblical biographies of Jesus each month. Listen to the sermons that we're having. Share what you're learning each week. Talk with somebody about it. And then do our practical step at the end, the Jesus Life step. Because mainly, we just want to know Jesus more. And we want to be more like Jesus. Both of those things. As we get to know him more, we should be becoming more like him. If you're not, then I somewhat wonder how well you're actually knowing him, because having a relationship starts to bring changes in our lives that draw us closer together. That's just natural. So today what we're talking about is that Jesus invested in a core group of people, aka Jesus chooses his 12 disciples. Now I know that this, even in this, it can be a troublesome title for some people, because it then starts to sound exclusive. Jesus has just this core group of people, and there's the insiders, and then there's outsiders type of thing. That's not my goal with it. And this is sort of like a sequel to some other sermons. It's seen in context of some of the other ones we've talked about this year, that Jesus, first, he invited inspection into his life, and he just said to anyone, hey, come get to see me, come walk around, see what I do. And then a second one was Jesus initiated intimacy, that after they'd had some time getting to see his life, then he said, okay, now that you've seen it, now come follow me, come spend more time with me. And so this is like the third step in that of, okay, there's this big group and all these people are looking at Jesus' life. And then there's less people who are actually willing to follow Jesus around. And then it gets even closer to the people who make a more firm commitment, that are going to be those close people in their life. It's just a picture of what happens often in relationships. Like, there was this woman I knew one time. Her name was Christine. She was one of a bunch of people. But I said, hey, I'd like to get to know you more. And she stepped further into that circle. And then it was, oh, would you like to have a relationship where we're looking towards marriage, and that's what we're considering, and we're going to date each other. And so there's a step further in. And then when I finally asked her to marry me, and she said naturally, and yes, and it was great, and we were happy. And so there's that progression of relationship. And so that's what this is looking at, an idea of progression of relationship. And it comes, as you get into those sorts of things, you do have titles and terms for things. I call Christine wife, and she's the only person in the world that I call wife, and she calls me husband, and there's special terms sometimes, and there's kind of special expectations. There is an exclusivity because, okay, me and Christine, I'm only married to one person. I'm not married to others. So that's a bit of background of this title. Hopefully it won't throw you off of like, oh, this is saying that Jesus is, he only has his favorites that he likes than other people he doesn't like. It's more seeing how the progress of relationship goes. So let's look at Luke chapter 6, verses 12 to 16. We looked at 12 last week when we were talking about Jesus praying all night. Jesus climbed a mountain, he prayed. He was there all night in prayer before God. And then the next day, he summoned his disciples. Now this is a larger group of people. He summoned his disciples, and then from them, he selected 12 that he designated as apostles. So, as we've been saying several times, often when we hear the word disciples with the Bible, we just think, well, Jesus had just 12. He had a lot of people that followed him around, kind of his disciples, but then there's this core group, this even closer group of people that were the 12. And some of their names: Simon, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, Simon, Judas, James, and Judas again. Two James, two Judases, etc. So, why did Jesus pick them? Those 12. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you I even know. I mean, the number 12 is significant in the Bible, so that's part of why. He does seem to have prayed about it, so I think that probably helped in picking who those 12 guys were. But this is one thing that I can say. If you're normally going to pick a group of insiders, a group of people that'll be close to you, these were not your typical choices at the time. These weren't mostly rich guys. They weren't necessarily the easiest guys to get along with. As you see throughout the biographies of Jesus, they seem to be fighting with each other, fighting with other people at times. They're not famous. They're not the religious all-stars that everyone looks at them and go, oh, these guys are perfect. These are the morally excellent ones. They don't have the same jobs as each other. They didn't have the same ages exactly as each other. From what we can tell, they don't seem to have the same politics as each other. At least Simon, who was a zealot, would have been against the Roman government. And Matthew, who had been a tax collector, we saw that, he would have been with it. So these are guys who wouldn't have picked each other. And then Jesus says, hey, you 12, come get to know me better. Awesome. So it's not that Jesus picks, oh, these are the easiest people to like, or these are the easiest people to always get along with. But he does choose them. So even if I can't tell you why he chose them, what does it mean when he says he chose them? Or why did he designate them as apostles? There's two parts to it. One has to do with relationship. The other has to do with responsibility. Matthew and Mark have the same thing. And in Mark chapter 3, when he goes through this list of the 12, he says, then he appointed the 12. And he says these two important things, that they might be with him, and that he might send them out to preach. So there's this core group that they can spend time with him, that they can actually get to see him close up, that they would walk around with him, that they would see the stuff that he's doing and actually be really involved with it. Before that point, yeah, people saw him and walked around some, but the idea is that Jesus is picking these so they can be closer, that they can spend more time eating, that he can talk with them one-on-one or in the group separately more often. That's relationship. But then there's responsibility to it. It wasn't just, hey, come get to know me so that you can like hanging out with me so I'm fun. Jesus is then going to send them out to preach. So they're with him, watching him preach, watching him do all this stuff. Up until this point, he has done miracles, he has been teaching, but now there's a decided relationship where it's not just, oh, come hang out with me, but it's, let's spend some time together so you can see what I'm doing, and you can go out and do it as well. I'm going to send you out. Come in close, send you out. A lot of this sermon, to me, connects very closely with what our church is. We are a church full of people from all over the world that come in and go out. Some people are here 3 months, some people are here 3 years. We've only been around for about 4.5 years, so no one's longer than that. We'll get there, I'm sure. But this idea that people come in and I want them to be a part of our community, I want them to get close to each other and close to Jesus in this time so that when they go out, wherever they go out, China, India, South Africa, Belgium, and wherever it is, that when they go out, they would be prepared and they would be capable to live like Jesus lived wherever they go. So Jesus calls people who would be the unlikely ones, that might be people like you and me, and he says, come get to know me, but then I'm going to have responsibility for you. I'm going to have something that you can do afterward. One of the things that ends up happening in the relationship is they get to hear some things a little closer. We'll probably look in a later week at the idea that Jesus, he teaches in parables often, and he uses these stories that are supposed to help us understand something that we can't see by talking about something that we know about. But then after he would tell some of these parables, he would pull his disciples aside and they'd be like, Jesus, what did that mean? I don't get it. And then Jesus often would explain a little more. And one time he said, like, it's granted to you guys to get to know the secrets and the mysteries of the kingdom. He gives them kind of special insight, special knowledge, access, because they're close to him. But why did he do that? Here's two verses that I think make a big difference. Because often we have this like, oh, I want to know more. I want to learn more about the Bible. I want to learn more about God. Or I want to learn more about Jesus. I want to have a closer relationship. It's not going to come simply by reading books. Knowledge is best learned when knowledge is acted out, when it is knowledge that is obedience. Two verses to look at that. In John 7:17 and John 14:21. In John 7:17, around that time, he's saying, you know, anyone who chooses to do the will of God will find out whether my teaching comes from God or whether I speak on my own. And he's telling them more and more, this isn't just me speaking on my own, it's what God has told me to speak. But it's then, okay, how do you know if it's the right thing to do? He said, well, if you choose to do the will of God, then you'll know. Often we have this, I want to know the answer before I start acting faithfully in obedience. And he's saying, if you'll start acting in obedience, that is when more revelation comes. And John 14, 21 says a similar thing. It says, whoever has my commands and keeps them is the one who loves me. Then the one who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I too will love him and show myself to them. So you have some set of knowledge, his commands. Well, main commands, he says, love your neighbor as yourself. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. He said later, a new command I give you, love just like I loved. So there's a good one to start with. He says, if you have my commands and you keep them, then I'll show myself to them. And one of these 12 disciples, one of these people that are supposed to be close to Jesus, says to him, well, Jesus, why are you going to show yourself to us? Why do you reveal yourself to us? And why aren't you doing it to the world in the same way? And he pretty much says the same thing over again, where it's not that I'm going to give you all of this revelation and then see if you're going to act on it. It's as you start acting in what I've given you, then you get more revealed to you. You get to learn more about who he is. Sometimes we feel that God isn't kind of holding up on his end of the deal in revealing himself. We're like, God, I'm doing all the things you want me to, and I feel like I'm not learning anything more. I think often that is because even though we say we're doing what he wants, we maybe haven't been doing what he asked us to do. And sometimes we think we are, but we're not always. I was talking with Cedric yesterday, and one of the things he said was, yeah, we can have this tendency to worship Sundays, to worship church. And we get this idea of, I've been going to church, I've been going to church meetings, so God should reveal himself to me because I've been in a church meeting. And the interesting thing is, there's no command in the Bible that says, thou shalt go to church on Sunday and that's how you're going to learn more about me. It's not that we don't meet and that he does work in that way, but we come up with our own rules sometimes of what we're supposed to do. And he's saying, look, number one, learn to love. And if we're not loving, if we're running after our own desires, if we're living selfishly, all those things, yeah, we can be fulfilling what we think are the rules, but that's not necessarily following what Jesus said. So with this, Jesus is asking his disciples not just to be interested in learning, but to be involved in learning. See that difference? Not just interested, but involved. And that's the question. Are you interested or involved? It doesn't mean that Jesus won't be a part of your life otherwise. Jesus healed interested people. People who are interested in what he was doing. And Jesus taught people who are interested. But if you really want to know him, if you want to get a closer relationship, you have to be more than interested. And going, oh, this is nice. I like getting to be around this. I like to see it. But you have to start being involved in doing what he's doing. Just like these 12 men. And he said, okay, come get to know me, and then I'm going to send you out. I have work for you to do. So, just to be honest with you now, maybe you don't feel like you're ready to be really involved with Jesus and what's going on. That's okay. If you know that this is where it's heading. If you're going to get more involved with Jesus, it's going to require you to act. So at least know that we're not putting up some kind of smokescreen that's hiding from you the fact that eventually, as you get to know Jesus more, he will send you out to do stuff. He will, through his Holy Spirit, be working in your life further and further. So know at least that that's where this is going to head. If you want to get in that relationship, there's more steps along the road. I have a son. He's about 2 months old. I keep trying to teach him lots of things. I don't know if he's understanding all of it yet, but I'm really excited to get to, I don't know, give along dad advice, you know? Like this, okay, here are some wise things I've learned from my life. So, son, listen closely. This is going to be important. Here's one of the things that'll be on that. Sometimes when you have to say something, it actually means the opposite. This is what I mean. The word cool, right? You all know what cool means. If you have to tell people that you're cool, you're probably not. Not to be unkind, but that's just when you're a kid in school and they're like, you gonna hang out with those losers? Come over here, we're the cool kids. I want to tell David. David, if they have to tell you that they're cool, they're probably not. And honestly, that happens with church stuff too. I've seen that. churches that try to be like, we're the cool church. Just be the church. You don't need to prove it to people. Or I've seen a Christian group, and it was in the newspaper one time, and someone was that had an interview, and they said, well, we just want people to know that, yeah, we're Christians, but, you know, we can be cool too. And some people, I'm sure, would read that and be like, yeah, that's so true. We're Christians and we can be cool. But when I read it, I went, you know what? If I wasn't a Christian and I'm reading this, I wouldn't go, oh, can you believe it? This Christian said he can be cool. I didn't know that. I'd be like, stop trying so hard, dude. Just be yourself. A second example. The word good. Especially when it's used like good Christian. If you got to tell somebody that you're being a good Christian, I'm going to guess that you're probably not being very good at it. Here's just one example from my life. So I lived in the Caribbean for a while. So I'm an outsider in the group. And driving my car, and I'm coming around a corner. And I see that there's another car coming from the opposite direction, who just so happens to be a little more on my side of the lane than he should be. So our car side mirrors hit each other. First, I'm just like, wait, what happened? Because it wasn't like a head-on collision. You just see this. But then I look in my rearview mirror. I see that he's stopping. So I stop, and I get out of the car and see that, yeah, the rearview mirror has popped off of mine. And this guy, as far as I know, the moment he gets out of his car, is yelling. You were driving too fast, and you hurt my car, and you don't know how much this is going to cost. Now, this guy had a much nicer car than I did. Has a nicer car than I have now as well. Probably a nicer car than I'll ever have, and that's fine. He's like, oh, and he's yelling from the first moment. It's not, are you okay, or anything. It's blame, 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 blah, 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 blah. And he'll walk up to me, he'll yell, and then he'll walk away. A friend of his just happened to be driving along, I guess. So he comes up, he stops, he sees what's happening, and he's walking up and trying to talk to his friend and trying to calm him down. And the guy just keeps going, you were going too fast. His friend that's trying to calm him down. And then the big moment comes where he's like, you know what? If I weren't a good Christian, I would beat you right now. I think that's the only time I've been threatened with getting beaten. And it just so happened to come from a good Christian. What do you know? I was like, wow, okay. Dude, something tells me that that's not what good Christian's supposed to look like. If you have to tell me I'm being a good Christian because I'm not punching you in the face, but I'm yelling at you, and I'm more concerned about a side mirror on a vehicle than I am about people. Maybe you should reconsider if you're having to tell me it. If I weren't a Christian at the time, trust me, I wouldn't have gone, wow, you're such a great man. Can you tell me where your church is? I'd like to hang out with you more often. Proverbs 27:2 says something similar to this, where he says, look, let another praise you, not your own mouth, a stranger, not your own lips. And hopefully my son David will learn this. You don't have to go around trying to impress people and telling them how awesome you are, because if you're telling them that, it's a good chance that they just won't believe you. But I said those to get to this point. There's a third one on that list with me. It's the word deep. Because people, they do. They'll talk to me about like, oh, yeah, I've been reading the Bible. Yeah, I got this really deep thing that I want to talk to you about. Oh, I've got this really deep teaching. And every time I hear it, it just goes, okay, let's see. Why are you trying to impress me? I was talking with another guy. He's got a nice accent, so I'll try to use his accent. But he works with a youth group. And I asked him, oh, how are things going with the youth group? Oh, it's going real good. And it's just wonderful the group is growing, but yeah, here's the thing. So every week we want to make sure that when the kids walk out, they've heard about Jesus. But there's also, yeah, some of them I think are ready to go deeper. Okay, I'll bite. So what do you mean by that? What do you mean by deeper? Well, you know, like biblical prophecy and modern events. Okay. Things that we think sound mysterious or secretive, we think must be deep. What did Jesus say was deep? I'll show you. In Luke 6, he says this. Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and don't do what I tell you? Okay, I'll show you what someone is like who comes to me, hears my words, and acts on them. That one is like a man building a house who dug deeply and laid the foundation on rock. What Jesus finds as deep is these things. You come to him, you hear his words, and you do it. And I know far too many people, honestly, too many churches, too many pastors, who try to make sure that they're teaching you something really deep, but they're not expecting you to do anything with it. Here's the thing. Here's why we're doing the Jesus Life Challenge this year. A lot of it is based off of these words. I want us to look at Jesus' life, to come to him, to hear what he's saying, and do it. If we do that, we'll be a deep church. If I can teach you everything about biblical prophecy, however good that is, but you're not living like what Jesus said, you're not deep. It just doesn't work that way. And I don't expect that Damascus Road ever will, nor am I sure that any church ever can go deeper than this. By the Holy Spirit, we look at Jesus and we do what he told us to do. It's not that we don't learn other things, but that is where deep comes from, that's where deep starts, that's where deep goes through the middle, and that's where deep gets to its end, is all in Jesus and living it out. If you're not obeying it, it doesn't count as deep for me. That's what Jesus emphasized. And yes, even things like spiritual gifts, great gifts, run after them, eagerly seek them out, but most important is love. What so happened to be one of the most important things Jesus talked about? Love. Paul said it. Jesus said it. If you get that, you're going to start going deep. If you don't get that, you're not going to learn it from a textbook. You're not going to learn it from going to seminary. You're not going to learn it from sitting and listening to Matthew Lunder speak. The way you're going to learn it is if you put it into practice. So here is a nice, hopefully catchy thing that you can remember to walk with. Deep is not what you put in your head or your heart or wherever else. Deep is what you put into practice. How about let's say that together for those people who are auditory learners. So, deep is not what you put in your head. Deep is what you put into practice. And if you take notes, write it down. That way you're seeing it, you're hearing it, you're writing it, you're saying it. If we can do that, we're doing good. If we don't do that, what are we here for? As a church, as this specific community, since we have so many people who come in and go out, my hope is that in the time that people are here, to be able to help them look at Jesus' life, understand how he lived, be able to search the scriptures for themselves, and then do it. So that we have people, they might be here for a short time, and when they go somewhere, I want them to so understand the real thing about who Jesus is, and what that means to follow Jesus, that if they walk into some place that calls itself a church, but isn't following Jesus, they can realize, wait, this isn't the real thing. And I want them to be the kind of people that they can walk into a church that may look completely different than they're used to, might have completely different music, completely different way of speaking, they might do different things during the week, but if they can understand, wait, this is about Jesus, and this is people following him, then they'll know this is a church I can be involved in. And I want us to be the kind of people that if they go back to their home city and they can't find anything, they can't find other Christians, they'll know first how to start living it themselves and then bring other people through this relationship process with Jesus so that they'll get to see Jesus, get around it, and then they'll grow up into being that family together. That's where I want our church to be able to be, is we're able to train people to go be disciples, to go be those that know Jesus and are more like him. So your Jesus life step, your practical thing this week, start where you are. Invest time in someone, just like Jesus invested time in his disciples. Invest time in someone that you're training to do what you do. There are purposely times in this church when I'm going to meet up with a guy one-on-one, and then I say to someone else, hey, why don't you come along with me? And that way we can get to meet and talk together, because I'm wanting them to see, oh, how do we get involved in people's lives? That's why we do connect groups, so that people can see, oh, that's how you lead a discussion, or that's how you make someone feel comfortable in your home. If you're praying with someone, try to get someone else, and that way they can see this is what it's like to actually pray out loud with people. But invest time into people and train them to be able to do that, because that's how Jesus did it. Yeah, he gave them time to look at his life, to move closer in, but eventually he says, now here's another step. I want you to be able to learn to do what I do.